Can you, I mean, you have mentioned, Albert has mentioned Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale. I've mentioned it. I don't know if this nation understands, Sandra, how damn close we are to that right now.
Well, that's what I'm about to, because there's a couple of Kindles in the house. Don't be shocked, but there's a couple of Kindles in the house now, Bob, and so I may have to, tap that up, reread that shit.
I would advise it at this point in time.
Well, it's been a while, and don't let me get on Netflix and watch the damn movie. That's one of my favorite movies.
Oh, I've never seen the movie version.
Robert Duvall is the general, whoever the lead.
Oh, he plays, he's a right winger as it is, and he plays a delightful lunatic.
Okay, well, he is the one that's getting some chick. Anyway, you need to see that movie. You haven't seen that?
No, I don't think I even knew there was a movie version of it. Yeah, we'll sit down and watch it with the family, like Disney night.
Right, yeah, you should, yeah, because, it's crazy-ass Robert Duvall, so just by that, it's going to be entertaining. Anyway, but I'm just, of course I'm on edge, and I shouldn't be. This says a lot about, my faith in the Democrats, because, women can always be thrown under the bus with this lot. So I'm bracing myself. I don't know what sort of compromise that Obama can make on this, though. You either have access to birth control or you don't. You know what I'm saying? What is the compromise?
And I either
can use my dollars or whatever to purchase something, or it's not available.
And remember, they're not just happy being exempted. They also want to make sure they're demanding that the Affordable Care Act be amended, even though it's already been passed. They want it amended, Sandra, to make it clear that nobody's insurance dollars anywhere can ever be used to purchase contraceptives.
No, but this is the dirty little trick here that Obama can be springing on folks. This is the basis of national health care. See, that's why they all flipping out. Two, beyond controlling women, this right here is what national health care can be. You get to get shit.
Well, I mean, honest to God, who says that there are a million ways that this makes no sense at all, and one of them is that if you are an employee of a Catholic organization, then you can follow church teaching. They're not going to start just mailing you the packages of ortho tricycline once a month. They're not going to do that.
It's nothing to do with them, though. That's the thing. That's the thing that's killing me. It's like, oh no, this is a relationship between, we already got one middleman. That's the goddamn health insurance. You don't have the church right there, too. I mean, it's absurd. It's outrageous. I don't know.
But you mentioned something a minute ago that I think is worth returning to, and you said it's scaring him to death because this is what national health care looks like. I learned a lot when I got to go to D.C. a couple of weeks ago and talk with a lot of people who really knew what the hell they were talking about, who had actually read the Affordable Care Act. And one of the things that they pointed out to me, I asked specifically about the Medicaid coverage within the Affordable Care Act. And it was amazing what I was told. You talk about this is what national health care looks like. The Medicaid coverage goes up to something like 400% of the poverty level. Now, if you go and you look up what the poverty level is for a family of four, mom, dad, and two kids.
Yeah, it's like 22, isn't it?
Yeah, well, yeah. At 400%, that's up to 80 grand.
Well, that's what I'm saying. No, I'm about to say, you're talking, anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Well, no, and so, at 60 grand, if you could be eligible for Medicaid, wouldn't you?
Well, exactly, that's interesting, so.
And the funny thing is, It's really poisonous to the right wing because every damn dime of it is paid for by the federal government.
Yeah, no,
The states have no burden in this whatsoever.
So I do think that there is that panic underlying this push. And, what you just said right there, definitely, irrespective of what I might feel about the a bill that was passed by Obama. This is a huge hole in the private setup. So I think there's a lot of fear about that too.
And but they don't dare mention it.
They don't mention it, but I mean, you know, I mean, I was able to sort of garner that, well, wow, this is interesting from that perspective. And you just said you got that information from your time up in D.C., so I think that we must be seeing the same kind of thing.
Well, and the thing is that Medicaid business, it really sort of obviates the mandate, okay? Because, you know, one of the concerns, and it's a concern of mine, it's a concern of yours, a number of folks in the Horn audience, you know, that we don't want to be compelled to buy something, okay?
Yeah. Or
participate
right,
in the profit process for for-profit health care.
Yeah, already been buying it. That's the thing. We know what we're getting. Anyway, I hear you.
Yeah, so the thing is, though, if you consider those poverty level standards and you consider 400%, and I'm pretty sure that's the number that was batted around when I was talking to these really smart people, then you know what? You and I are going to fall within the parameters of being able. There's no public option because Medicaid's going to be available.
Well, I mean, and this is the stuff that is unfolding gradually in front of people, and it's also unfolding in front of these freaks, which I think is the main cause of the freak out. You know, I mean. We'll see, because every year, and it completely comes in effect in 2014, right?
Right.
It's so bizarre that he set this up for after this election. For the life of me, I really don't understand the machinations behind it.
Well, I asked that very question, Sandra, and the answer I got seemed a rational one.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are mechanisms that have to be set up. For instance, I talked with someone who liaisons with the state commissioners of insurance, who, if they want to, can have oversight. You know, because you know we're all about states' rights, right? Well, they can have oversight of the implementation and the execution. Of the Affordable Care Act. The state can have the right to do that. Or they can say, nope, this is too much for us, federal government, you do it. And oddly enough, the red states are the ones that are saying, nope, federal government, you do it. You know, hypocrites again. Mm-hmm. But the thing that was pointed out to me is to note, as this person did in our conversation, that just getting those mechanisms in place where the regulation and the monitoring can be done either on a state or a federal level is proving damn near impossible, because even the states that want to do it themselves, that in good faith want to do it themselves, are saying, look, we don't have the people, we don't have the infrastructure, we don't have the machines, we don't have the forms, we can't. And this is in anticipation of a 2014 date. So some of that, I think, was just it sounds like damning with faint praise when I say it, Sandra, but it was bureaucratic reality or bureaucratic practicality. So what it's worth.
I mean, but I also think, I mean, okay, well, like I said, I find it really difficult to believe that the administration can really afford then to waver on this rule. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it would put other things in their legislation at risk, right? If they give in on this, I don't know. I just, and also I'm sorry, but you know, a lot of women use birth control, Bob. I don't mean to sound understated, but you understand what I mean?
I should. Well, and as I pointed out in my conversation with Albert.
I mean, yeah. And so it's just, anyway.
By the way, an interesting little statistic. Guess who avails themselves of abortion more than the national average of accessing abortion?
Who's that?
Roman Catholic women.
Well, yeah. You know, but I'm not interested in blaming you know, the women of that hideous
No, that's religion. That's just religion. I mean, that's just the reality of the situation.
Well, it's just the reality of being, you know, a sexually active woman in marriage or out of marriage. It's like, hello, what the hell are you going to do? You know, obviously not. If you can have birth control, you're going to use it. I mean, the whole thing is just absurd. It's 2012, and I'm just sort of looking at Santorum and thinking, oh, dear God. You know, I'm thinking, you know, Romney is so bad that we have to see this asshole get some traction. Give me a break.
And that's, you know, that's the measure of it. It truly is. This is how icky. I mean, and they're all of them living for, what is it, March 6th? We've talked about this. They're living for Super Tuesday.
Super Tuesday. I couldn't remember what date it was, but no. I was horrified and laughing when I saw that fool won all three of those contests. I thought, oh, my God. And Romney got, like, completely annihilated in Colorado, too. And that was... I mean, they must be spinning. They must be spinning in his campaign. What's happening?
Yeah, his support levels are down 60%, 58%, 46%. Nobody wants him. Nobody likes him.
Right.
And it's got to be kind of a sad and icky feeling. But then again, he's just sitting around waiting for the plutocrats to anoint him.
Well, no, and it's gross. I mean, I just think that his whole sick is just not playing well. I don't know what the big party bosses are doing, but they must be scrambling. I read an article where they're talking about that pig Christie again. That's how desperate they are.
Some sort of brokered convention?
Yeah, they still talking about that pig coming to the top.
Well, and the other fascinating thing out of this is that Citizens United is biting them in the ass repeatedly, because part and parcel of the continued existence in this campaign of the frothy one, or Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist, is the fact that you've got these Citizens United billionaire plutocrats who are basically in a bidding war against each other. There was an article in the New York Times today about the cowboy hat wearing freak.
Yeah, I saw that guy for Santorum, right?
Yeah.
Oh, no. It's just some sort of joke when you think about it. You're like, okay, so Newt Gingrich, they all have their sugar daddies, you know, and it's just like this. I mean, it's no wonder that people completely tune out. This system is horrifying. Sorry.
And you know, I'm not one of these ideological purity people who got all pissed off when Obama made the announcement the other day that, yeah, he was going to use them too.
Oh, please. Yeah, that whole hand-wringing was like, well, what the hell else are you going to do? Shit.
Yeah, I will not unilaterally disarm. You know, I wouldn't. No? If I was in his shoes, I wouldn't either.
I know, like, you know, I saw how I feel. Give me a break. You know, you're going to demand that of him? Come on now. He see, just like we see, what the hell is going on the other side. What is he going to do? You got to turn him loose. You got to turn them Chicago freaks loose.
Well, and to the extent that he's still got some Wall Street freaks.
Whatever. I mean, no, I was just thinking, well, with this giveaway to the banks, shouldn't they be shuffling back over to him?
Oh, the imagery of the word shuffling back.
Well, you know.
I understand. Yeah, I know.
It's always a nice shuffling around, but they should be, because let me get this straight. There was a liability of $700 billion, and the government is settling for $26. I don't even need to know nothing more than that. That's all you need to know.
Why not round up and say that it was $1 trillion and we've settled for 13 cents on the dollar?
Whatever. It's all just a joke. It's like, oh, and by the way, if you lost your home because someone stole it from under you, here's $2,000. What the? What kind of fucking shit is that? And by the way, it may take 3 years.
Right, because the one thing that's attached to all this, the most important thing, is immunity from suit.
Well, for some though, it's not by all means everything. So the idea that they can still look into that mirrors thing, that's a catcher there, because that's a big problem for the banks. You know, I didn't get a chance to look at their stocks today, but I didn't see no stock market going crazy on it, and I don't know what the share prices for B of A, JP Morgan, Citigroup, and whoever else is involved in this continual ripoff. But there's still some room to get them if for some reason they find out that that Mears is complete smoke and mirrors, which I think it is. Then they're in, I mean, this whole country is in shit, in the shits, because everyone should just stop paying their mortgage because no one knows who owns what. That's the fear.
Well, and look at that and look at that indictment that came down in Missouri the other day. 139 counts, Sandra. 139 counts of fraud directed at that company, DocX, and the woman who was the head of the company. And their entire shtick was dummying up title documents. 139 counts. And the interesting thing out of that, as I think I mentioned, is that these are not 139 counts of fraud that are being claimed by individual homeowners. These are 139 counts of fraud that were perpetrated against the county recorder of Boone County, Missouri. One county in Missouri.
Right, and it's just, yeah, I mean, and that's what I mean. It's just sort of, you know, the whole sort of platform of property and property rights, and it's just another house of cards, and that's what I that's kind of what I think is going on. I don't think they have any choice but to pretend and extend, but that Snyderman, you know, I don't know if he's been completely co-opted. I'm a bit fish-eyeing that bullshit, but they claim to still be preserving at different aspects of their going after these banks. But this definitely relieves them of a huge portion of their problems. But we'll see. I don't know. I feel bad for the homeowners. It's like $2,000. That's like a slap, man. A slap in the face. You've been defrauded. You've been out of your home, and all they're giving you is $2,000?
Yeah, don't spend it all in one place. That'll make a nice down payment on a $10,000 house. Now all you got to do is find one.
Well, Detroit.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's what did Newton Leroy Gingrich call it? That's social engineering.
Yeah, well, there are homes there selling for that low. But anyway, I'm not going to comment too much about it because it's still, you know, I don't know all the facts. It's just bits and pieces and that I've read and seen. So I'm not going to say I reserve judgment because just the fact that the liabilities are near a trillion is enough for me. I just think, well, obviously we're getting screwed over again, you know. And the banks and the markets have sort of penciled in this already. Please.
We'll pencil it in. Oh, I love it.
Oh, God. But anyway, there was something else I wanted to ask you. Oh, God, I can't really remember. Shit. Oh, well, I guess that's really...
Well, no, it happens to the best of us.
Yeah. So you say you're going offline? Are you no more free?
Well,
I don't even know your paying number. I should find out.
Well, the toll free is 877-443-2366. The direct is 304-658-3333, and all the switchovers of the direct line, so called Hunt Group, that's what they call it at the phone company. Takes place tomorrow, and we get different internet service. So hopefully, among other things, one of the problems I've had, Sandra, is that, you know, we've got this 24/7 stream that runs when there's not a live program going. And in the middle of the night, with nobody using the internet, I come in the morning, and it's crashed. And so
okay.
I haven't been sending out, and it's only 64K. Okay, I mean it's not like we're using massive bandwidth to do it. So that's a huge problem. So the internet and the phone side are going to get replaced, but I have to find a new toll-free carrier because the toll-free was all part of the package that we had coming through the other company. And so I got and that may have to. I don't know how long it'll take for them to port these lines over to this new company because the new company doesn't offer toll-free. That was the downside.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I understand, you know, because I know you didn't appreciate having almost a whole week of broadcasting time sort of ripped out from under you recently.
Yeah, and that wasn't even these guys' fault. That was not CityNet's fault. That was hackers attacking the White Rose server.
Oh, right. Oh, wow.
That was some seriously ugly business.
Wow. Okay. Well, listen, I'll let you go. But the only other thing that popped in my mind was, you know, did you hear about that transportation bill? I mean, I know it's the anti-union stuff, but the thing that really struck me beyond that was loosening up the rules so these drones can be in.
Yeah, nothing is what it seems anymore.
Oh my God, that story really is.
Yeah, drones are transportation now? I'll be damned.
Well, it used to be the little toys that you could play, you know, those little things, but now they're making it so that these same things that they're using to kill people around the world are coming to a town near you.
And that is such a very creepy idea to me. That's as creepy as the ideas of the cameras in New York City.
Or the CCTV that you're required to have by law to have a business in England.
Yeah. So that they
kind
could,
of stuff.
Yeah. So
but
that,
anyway,
what?
It's just something to keep your eye on because I think the drone stuff is.
Well, and remember they're reinserting the Keystone XL pipeline in that thing too.
Well. Yeah, and today they also added the killing that contraception rule on the transportation bill, too. So, I mean, it's just non-ending.
So, in essence, it's going to come out of the House, it's going to go over to the Senate, and, to get anything onto Obama's desk, it's going to have to get past the Senate, which means it's going to have to get through committee, which basically means that there's not going to be a transportation bill.
Yeah, well, who knows? I mean, they're also trying real hard, and Obama wants it too, to bring back that line item veto thing for him. And it's just like, you know what, Congress, why don't you just cede all your authority and just call it a day? Just go home.
Yeah, right. Just,
just leave.
Turn the answering machine on and go spend more time with your families.
Man, anyway, okay, listen, have a good evening.
All right, you too. Take all care, right. Sandra. Bye now. Sandra calling from California. Watch the transportation bill. By the time the Republicans in the House get done with it, it's going to have every sickening thing you ever imagined in it. Whether it's contraception or drones, really? I'm going to feel real icky because it's already bad enough. Because periodically, people in fighter jets in the military like to come and fly the New River Gorge and the gorge of the Gauley River, because it's some pretty challenging flying, and among other things, it replicates certain places in Iran, gorges and stuff, and narrow canyon walls where you might hide a nuclear facility, and you get to play Luke Skywalker. You know. Going in. Yeah. And now there's the possibility that I get to look in the sky and see drones? This is a Republican House of Representatives. Since when? I thought they were all about our personal freedoms. I mean, I got a roof with holes in it. I don't want some damn drone looking down into my bedroom and watching Agnes swear because it's raining on her again. It's not fun. But, yeah, watch it. Watch it. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Well, hey, Preston, how are you?
I'm doing all right. Wanted to let you know that we finally got a visit from Old Man Winter. It was fun.
How deep?
15 inches here in Denver.
Wow.
Yeah, it was actually a record snowfall for Denver for the month of February. Our big snows usually take place in March or even April.
Well, and that's, we got an eighth of an inch dusting that actually has stayed on the ground for 2 or 3 days. And me being the eternal pessimist that I am, I'm waiting, we got a big break in December and January. You know, December 30th, the day that my wife and son got rear-ended, it was 72 degrees outside. And that's just weird for around here. So I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. And it'll probably be a snowshoe.
It'd be good, a snowshoe.
You know, like in April or early May or something completely insane after all the dedicated gardeners have gotten out their tomato plants.
Right. And, the flowers start coming up and the trees are doing their thing. You'll get a foot and a half, two or something.
Right. Just as the jonquils are poking their little heads through the grip. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Because, yeah, we've had some, we had a lot of 50-degree, 60-degree days there for a while. And I noticed, you know, I watch the Weather Channel from time to time, and they've been they've had this ongoing series, kind of like Where's Winter? And it's been warm in spots for sure. And but we had Santorum here recently at the Colorado School of Mines talking about...
Yeah, that was where the guillotine comment came from.
Oh, I missed that part of it. But.
Yeah, he said Obama's leading us toward the French Revolution, and people who believe in God are going to go to the guillotine.
You know, it's so much of this kind of histrionics that they do, which is the world, they're coming at you, you know, concentration camps, the liberals are going to do all these terrible things. I tune into a moment of Glenn Beck today, and he was talking about a mass bloodletting. And it really brought to mind a book presentation I heard recently on Book TV. Thomas Frank, who some people may know from his earlier book, What's the Matter with Kansas?
Yes.
He has a more recent book called Pity the Billionaire.
Right.
Yeah, and the subtitle is something like How the Right Used the Economic Crisis to... you know, further advance their agenda, and how the Tea Party has co-opted and so much of like the look of a populist movement with the signs and the rallies and the bullhorns and the buttons, and they pilfer a lot of arguments from the populist movements of the past and even from contemporary liberal movements about, they may even discuss class struggle at times and the elites, yet it's tweaked in the service of the elites. And, you know, of course, a lot of it's being funded by the Koch brothers and others. And how their language, their narratives succeed in pitting people against each other, the usual stuff. And a lot of it's kind of histrionics. And he talks about Glenn Beck, and his style of ramping people up, and he talked about how Glenn Beck's one of his books, maybe a autobiography he wrote, he talks about how much he admires Orson Welles. And Thomas Frank pointed out, you know, it's not because of Orson Welles's politics that he admires, that Glenn Beck admires Orson Welles. And he found this picture of Beck doing this posture, and Thomas Frank was like, I recognized it from somewhere. And he finally found it. And the posture that Beck was doing was the same posture that Orson Welles had done for publicity when he was doing War of the Worlds.
No kidding.
No kidding. The whole make-believe, the Martians are coming to get you, but instead of the Martians, it's the liberals. And, or it's the progressives and secularists. That's another popular one these days. Anyway, it was a very insightful, funny, and worrisome presentation, and it was on C-SPAN, their Book TV on the weekends. It's really interesting, because they'll also do the far-right stuff, and just preceding Thomas Frank's discussion was a live 3 hours with Mark Stein, who fills in sometimes for Limbaugh, and he also fills in for
him. Oh, I've heard him, yeah.
Show. Despicable. It was absolutely appalling. Well, of course, attacking liberals and Occupy Wall Street people, caricatures and misrepresentation all over the place, deceit, endless. But the Islamophobia especially was so awful. He talks about Muslim imperialism and all this stuff, and it's just exactly what the Nazi propagandists were doing when they were always talking about how they were facing the threats from Poland, or, you know, Czechoslovakia is pointed at the heart of Germany like a dagger. And instead of going after the Jews, it's the Muslims. And, you know, and that they can do this with a straight face when we're, you know, two wars of aggression, continuing occupations. You know, now Iran's a big threat because maybe someday they'll may develop a nuclear deterrent. But, you know, we forget to mention how we've surrounded that country with like 40 of our own military bases. We've got aircraft carriers, and in Iran's long history, they just have not been invading their neighboring countries, but we've been involved in them, in their country. You know, the civilized West has been involved in their country in all sorts of negative ways, you know, helping
yes.
the Shah, overthrowing Mossadegh, and then helping the Shah be in power for about two decades. The Shah actually killed...
Oh, wait, I was about to say, with his brutal, brutal secret police. What were they called? Savak?
Savak. Yeah, that's a Savak or something like that. So, you know, just the group delusion and convenient amnesia goes on and on. And I'm sure it was kind of driving the C-SPAN guy. My guess is that he didn't like it, but they just let it sit there. And all the callers were congratulating him, talking about how great he was. I called in. I just couldn't take it anymore. I called in, but apparently I didn't call in early enough. I was on hold for over an hour, but just, you know, I don't think they're keeping me out. But they take calls, and they also take emails, so it was moving.
Right, and they've got, I mean, they've got a dozen lines. They've probably got two dozen lines because, you know, they've got, or maybe three dozen because they've got that one for Democrats, one for...
Yeah.
Republicans and one for independents.
Mm-hmm.
And usually if you've got one of those, you've got a hunt group, and usually the smallest hunt group in broadcast is around six lines.
Okay, yeah.
Because that's basically the smallest real serious broadcast system you can get. So they've either got one hunt group and it rings differently, or they've got three different systems set up there.
Yeah. You know, for some shows, they do the progressive or liberals, conservatives, independents, that sort of categories. For this show, they did the categories of calling in was like on the East Coast and then the mountain and Pacific Coast people call in. So they had that sort of phone separation.
Weird. I'm not that familiar with. But whatever they do, I'm cynical enough to know to think that they break it out the way they want it to break out.
Yeah, and so it was just upsetting, to be quite honest with you. But I loved how it was the Thomas Frank discussion that followed that immediately, and Frank, you know, indirectly was just demolishing, you know, what Stein had just spent the past 3 hours doing. So. It worked out okay. And then they repeated it shortly after. And for people who are interested in this sort of stuff, you know, Book TV or C-SPAN, you can get it from there. And usually they have their book discussions online, available
right.
online a couple days afterwards. And so I'd certainly highly recommend Pity the Billionaire, Thomas Frank.
I read an excerpt from it over at Alternet, and it's fascinating. And he's a brilliant writer. And does supremely good analysis as well.
Yeah. He has something on his website that I found very interesting to really bring home this aristocracy here that's being developed, this corporate aristocracy, and how separated they are from us. Rabble, he lives around D.C. apparently, and he went to this part of Washington, D.C. where all these corporate contractors live in their castles. And, well, before he went there, he went to kind of a middle-class area of D.C. and how, you know, this was the vision of, you know, some sort of economic justice and fairness in the society. And from there, he went to these castles of the corporate feudal lords. He was chased out real quickly. A security guard zoomed up and kind of chased him out. But you can read a lot. He also brought home how you can read a lot about a society through architecture and design and stuff like that. And if people really want an honest look at who has the power, what institutions have power in this society, it's not the big government that the right wing's always warning us about. You look at the skyline of any big city, you'll see maybe a couple church steeples, maybe an apartment, a couple government buildings, but towering over all of that are these, you know, castles of these transnational corporations.
Yeah, the mirrored glass, right? Well, the what's the most prototypical example, the is it still the Transamerica building in San Francisco?
Yeah, yeah, there's that. Here in Denver, we've got something that's often called the cash register building because the top of it sort of shaped like an old-time cash register. I forget who's in it. I know in one building downtown, there's a third floor of Halliburton had the third floor. I was actually a security guard at it for a while. This is before Halliburton was like more commonly known. And that's actually, people were surprised I was a security guard for a while because, I don't know, whatever.
It doesn't really fit with the anti-authoritarian, the nature there, President.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah. There is that, but there's a lot of ways in which you can take a job like that and kind of continue with anti-authoritarian ways of being. I mean, I was able to read so much good material on the job. Mine was an unarmed position, thankfully, and my sort of position was the security guard who's needed just, you know, for insurance purposes. The building has to have some warm body in there. And it was empty all night long, and so I really didn't have much to deal with. And I carried on that time-honored tradition of the security guard catching a few Z's.
Oh, heck yeah.
And reading, you know, I saw and I met all these right-wing guys who had a lot of these jobs, and they were getting all kinds of right-wing activism done on the job, setting up websites, you know, emailing, writing, reading, doing radio station work, calling in. So they're very active, and I've told a lot of my progressive friends, I'm like, you need some money, there's jobs available in this field, and it can be a real opportunity to both learn, you know, roaming around the business offices for a while. Again, you can learn a lot just from design of things. Like the Halliburton office, they had all these maps on the wall of, you know, pipelines and planned pipelines, and I've had other friends in security work tell me about the PR work that a lot of businesses were doing and how they were respond. They'd cut out stuff in the Denver Post and be like, we got to respond to this, you know, letters that they were working on. So, yeah, it was an interesting experience. I did that for about a year. I also worked at the headquarters of Boston Market and Einstein Bagels. They were kind of together.
Oh, and I never realized that they were two peas in a pod. I got to admit, I was never a big Boston Market fan.
Yeah, nor was I. So,
but I can lose my mind over a really good bagel. I truly can.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
I'm not supposed to eat a lot of them anymore.
Cutting down on bread or something.
Yeah. Well, I just found out the other day that we were going over some blood work and the D word was used.
Okay.
You know, yeah. Diabetic.
Yeah, that's being used a lot for sure.
But at least I'm not going to pull a Paula Deen and start a website offering diabetic liberal radio solutions or anything. So I'm taking a pill and watching what I eat, and really, I'm really cranky. I'm masking it pretty well so far, I think. I just look at Agnes and go, I want a cracker. Yeah.
I understand, definitely.
But the nice thing is, it came with some good news that if I pull that I can pull back from the brink, that if I exercise a lot and lose myself my practitioner said to start with 10% of my weight. But she said, if you want to go a little further, that'd be fine too. So, if I could shed down to about 220 pounds, I'd probably be in pretty good fighting form.
Great.
But it turns out the fats and the lipids and stuff were what was causing my pancreas to go to war with me and everything. The whole thing is apparently a syndrome, and I have it. I can't tell you how not happy I am to hear it. Oh, congratulations, Bob. You've got... but, you know, we'll weather through it. And if I can just, you know, by getting off my dead butt and going out and taking a nice energizing walk and not eating, you know, three helpings of banana pudding after dinner, you know, I think I can do that. I think I can do that.
Yeah, I definitely. And I, you know, walking, I think, you know, it's nice physically and mentally. You know, Tom Hartman has that book, Walk Your Blues Away, and about kind of the emotional space it can often create.
Well, I'm kind of contemplating a treadmill, though, Preston, because you can walk your walk in your blues away here where I live.
You get more depressed when you see the blown up mountains, I guess.
Well, no, not so much that as the sort of PTSD that you come home with after having nearly been wiped out by any number of rogue coal trucks.
Right, right. I understand, definitely. Yeah, I used to be a bit overweight. I weighed almost, well, around 200 pounds. I'm 5'10"-ish when I stand up straight. And when I was in college, I weighed a couple hundred pounds. And, you know, I was drinking a lot of beer, as people in college.
Beer is good. Beer is good food.
And, yeah. And I was going to CSU in Fort Collins, and at the time, you only had to be
19. Sell beer there, don't they?
They sell beer, and you only had to be 19 to drink that half the alcohol beer, the 3-2 beer. They don't even make that anymore, but yeah, about this is over 20 years ago now. I was able to buy it myself. I'm pretty young, and I was eating a lot of fast food. You know, I liked all the Taco Bells and a lot of pizza.
And that's the thing. I mean, it is possible to eat well, and it's. It's not as hard as it seems. The problem is the ubiquity of the processed foods.
The ubiquity and the price is right. That stuff's inexpensive.
Yeah. It's empty calories.
Yeah, and it's subsidized so hugely. The corn syrup, the corn industry is subsidized. And, But, you know, Michael Pollan's done such great work on this topic, and he's actually coming to Denver later this month. He's going to talk about...
Oh, you'll be there too, won't you?
I'm hoping to. I'm actually hoping I might be able to maybe videotape it for YouTube. I've been working with a buddy of mine, and he's...
That'd be awesome if they'll allow it. You know, see, that's one of the things that I kind of miss in not being... I love to do that kind of thing, like when we were able to... broadcast the Chris Hedges lecture for the Seneca 2 folks.
Yeah,
it's
great.
It's magnificent to leverage new media that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really really gratifying. I hope you get to go, and I hope you get to tape it, because I would love to see that, because he's a brilliant, an absolutely brilliant man, and. You're right. What he has done in terms of making people aware, you know, that How to Eat, that little thin volume that was kindly gifted to me, How to Eat, you know, and one of the rules is, or the rules of eating, whatever it was, one rule was, if it wasn't on your grandmother in your grandmother's spice cabinet, you don't need to eat it.
Right, right. I remember that one.
If you can't pronounce it, don't cook with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, mono and diglycerides, maltodextrin. Oh, Mom, can I have a maltodextrin this morning? Better than Ovaltine.
Right.
Of course,
right.
I'm one of those weirdos that doesn't like Ovaltine. I'm trying to, in the spirit of Cool Hand Luke, I'm trying to get my mind right.
Yoo-hoos were my drink of choice when I was a kid. Do you remember Yoo-hoo?
Oh, my son has a Yoo-hoo problem.
Okay.
And the thing is, he's even become a purist. He doesn't like the Yoo-hoos in a can. Dad, it just doesn't taste right.
I agree. I know just what he's saying.
Yeah, it's Yoo-hoo out of a bottle or nothing.
Yoo-hoos and SpaghettiOs with meatballs.
No.
Every once in a while, my mom made the mistake of getting the SpaghettiOs with that little hot dog.
Yeah, oh, no.
No.
And see, I've still got a. I'm still a big beans and weenies man. I mean, but made homemade, they're so much better. One of the things, you know, I've been reading through. Oh, what can I eat? What can I eat? What should I eat? What should I eat? And apparently, one of the things I'm supposed to eat a lot of is greens, and that was great news. And as soon as I can, I think one of the things I'm going to do. I noticed that there's like a crock pot with three pots in it. I don't know if you've seen one of these things. But the beauty of the crock pot is that it will keep food at safe heat levels for quite a while. And so I'm thinking, you know, I'll do a big mess of fresh greens, not out of the can. Big mess of fresh greens, and just keep a standing supply of good beans and greens, and then I got to figure out what goes in the third pot. Maybe matzo ball soup. I don't know.
Interesting. That sounds great.
And because, you know, it's like your own little buffet at home, isn't it? Because, you know, I can sit down. And now, the problem is going to be what we do to the greens and what we do to the beans. Because both of those are best served by inclusion of a couple of good hunks of hog jowl or a ham hock or whatever in it. Yum. And then the greens. No, I mean, I put the greens in the bowl and I unload about a half a bottle of Cholula or something on it, and away I go. I'm a happy man.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, mm-hmm. just all I gotta do is get my mind right and not you know, thou shalt not crave hot dogs. Wendy's is not a real restaurant. I tell you what, sometimes I feel like I'm snake bit, Preston, because, you know, one of the things that I'm plagued by more than others is that I go hypoglycemic real easy. You know, literally start, you know, I start shaking and the beads of sweat come out and it's really feels stupid. And so you've got to have something to boost your sugar then when that happens. And so I told Agnes, you know, I'm going to go up to the grocery store and I'm going to get some bananas. And when that happens, I'll have a banana with natural peanut butter and that'll be great. And she said, that's a great idea, Bob. So away to the grocery store I went, and I kid you not, those bananas were greener than my yard in high summer. I mean, there wasn't a hint of yellow about them, so they're parked in a brown paper bag ripening now, and I'm just waiting so I can, because now that I, you know, a green banana tastes like crap. And so now I'm anxiously awaiting being able to have a peanut butter and banana for breakfast in the morning.
Great. That sounds really good.
Well, if it's good enough for Elvis, it's good enough for me.
Definitely.
You know, he liked a grilled peanut butter and banana sandwich.
You know, banana's another one of those crops that has become, you know, overly monocultured.
Oh, yeah.
But it turns out there are hundreds of different varieties. I heard somebody on NPR talking about the banana and different bananas around the world, the history of the banana. And but there again on a large scale, people learning the intricacies of the food system.
I was at our Kroger one day, and I saw these wee tiny, I mean, probably they're like fingerling bananas. You know, fingerling potatoes are all the thing. I love those. But they weren't any longer than your finger, and they were organic. And, you know, heck, I just had to have some, and they were yummy.
I bet they were expensive. Like there again, you know, I mean the ones with all the chemicals, they somehow turn out to be so cheap.
Subsidized.
That's right.
Brought to you by Better Living Through Chemistry.
There you go. And so that's great that you found some organic ones. And,
finding organic things in West Virginia, especially where I am, that's like a crow it from the rooftops moment.
Well, hopefully your farmer's market will have grown a little bit this spring.
Yeah, and the question is, when do we actually call that spring? So, yeah.
Yeah.
But, it's fun. When it's open, it's magnificent. And, of course, I'd like to get a garden in, but that remains to be seen. It's a question of the deer, the equipment, and the ground itself, because my favorite gardening spot was taken up by the great septic tank crisis of 2010.
Well, speaking of gardening, growing things, this may seem unrelated, but have you seen the film The Blair Witch Project?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Okay. I just saw it a few months ago recently, and I tend to avoid scary movies. You know, I read enough Noam Chomsky that I get frightened enough, and hear stuff like that, you know. And, but I, you know, it was such a kind of a novel movie and done in a way that, you know, low budget and all that stuff. I went to check it out, and it was scary for sure. Well, the lady who starred in that, her name's Heather Donahue, and she just wrote a book called Grow Girl. And the subtitle is something like, How After Blair Witch Project My Life Went to Pot. And she tells the story about how she wasn't getting good work in the Hollywood stuff. She was doing stuff she was kind of ashamed of. And so she just kind of was redeveloping her life and looking for things to do. And she started to grow a garden, vegetable garden, but the deers and the rabbits were eating everything. And then her boyfriend came around, and she took off with her boyfriend and ended up on this pot farm in Northern California. And her book is basically a story of that. And it was, I was so impressed with how she wrote it. And it was so much more than the pot industry and supplying stuff to, you know, people who just like it recreationally or people are using it for medical purposes, whatever. But it was also her, you know, this meditation practice she's been incorporating in her life, and she's been working at this hospice, you know, sitting with the dying, and that whole experience and the laws around it. She's very concerned about the potential corporatization of this product. I mean, already they're seeking to put patents on something called Sativex. And I'm, you know, she talked about how concerned she is about just the big pharma takeover of the business. My hope is that maybe it'll become like the beer industry, where there will be these corporate behemoths, but there will also be microbrews and then home brewers.
Yeah, micro growers.
Yep, exactly. And just maintaining that cottage industry. Because even if people don't use it themselves, it's still, it's a fascinating topic, both culturally, medically, politically. You know, there's the whole issue of the drug war.
Yeah, now for me, Preston, the last thing in the world I need right now is the munchies.
Okay, right. But economically as well, here in Denver, where we've passed that medical marijuana deal, that's created 3,000 jobs here in Denver alone.
Yeah. And you know, there are economic aspects that the right wing absolutely refuses to consider. I just saw a tweet a few minutes ago by somebody who said, you know, hey, Rick Santorum, you want to create jobs? How about 2 million gay weddings?
2 million gay weddings, you know, medical marijuana franchises, grow houses.
Yeah.
Yeah, the electricians that get employed, the marketers. There's all
because they love to use that downstream employment stuff when they're talking about putting a toxic pipeline through the middle of the United States. Well, you know, there's going to be a guy who slices bologna for bologna sandwiches for pipeline workers, and he's going to be able to afford a yacht.
Yeah, and then there are the people who are building the, you know, chemotherapy machines, so they'll be taking care of you after you drink enough of our benzene.
Right. I mean, some of this stuff is amazing. I had an email from our buddy Dr. John just a little bit ago about a thing that's kind of a local celebrity, if you will. A purple squirrel, John writes, yeah, really, found in Pennsylvania. Apparently a legit story, Speculation that he's been drinking fracking water. And the squirrel is, no kidding, purple. Purple squirrel released back into Pennsylvania wilderness. Now, hopefully neither John nor I are scammed on this, but apparently there are some people, let's see. Oh, how about this? A quote from Krish Pillai, a professor at Lock Haven University of Pennsylvania, says the color of the squirrel should not be taken lightly. Here's the quote. This is not good at all. That color looks very much like Tyrian purple. It is a natural organobromide compound seen in mollusks and rarely found in land animals. The squirrel has too much bromide in its system, possibly from all the bromide-laced frack water it's been drinking. I would raise the alarm. This could mean bladder cancer for humans down the road. And, of course, when we get to bladder cancer, I'm reminded, of course, of living downstream.
That's right. You bet. I've been seeing pictures of deer, you know, with these huge tumors on them. And, you know, there's just a lot of ecological just breakdown, and, well, more than breakdown, it's ravaging, plundering. As Ray Anderson is a term he used a lot, plundering the earth. And, you know, a couple weeks ago, we, speaking of Sandra Steingraber and living downstream, we had a conference here in Denver called the Downstream Neighbor Conference. And it was all about water issues, and they brought Maud Barlow, who's involved with, like, Canada's version of, like, Public Citizen. And she's a leading internationally known water rights advocate. And, you know, first she's shocked that during all this presidential circus stuff, you know, knowing how rarely water issues are talked about, and it's such a critical issue, at least as important as oil shortages and stuff like that. And then there's fracking going on all around the country now, more, you know, all around the world, and how that's just polluting so many water systems. And
well, we're either going to be able, we're either going to evolve very quickly to be able to drink poison, or we're going to take, we're just going to put ourselves out of our own miseries.
Yeah,
because evolution is not known for being something that happens quickly.
You know, we're creating a Mordor. Is it Mordor, right? The Lord of the Rings, that kind of desolate wasteland where there's kind of monster creatures were tearing down all the forest and shoving it into the fires to build, you know, smelt the iron for their weapons. I mean, that is our system here in the military empire. You know, plundering the Earth's resources, so... You know, $700 billion in weapons now, and then 400 military bases around the world, and now we're going to have how many thousand drones flying overhead in our skies?
I feel safer already, don't you?
Yeah, and how long before those collide with some passenger airplane or something like that? You know, that's just what we need, more traffic up in the sky, you know, spying on us. Really, it's really, it's utter madness.
There are times I think, Preston, that I would love nothing more than to, okay, this is a moment of pure silliness, win the lottery, buy a boat, and just stay out at sea somewhere like a bad Kevin Costner movie.
I know that feeling. I know that feeling well. And
But then I'd foul my props inside the, you know, size of Texas, vast sea of plastic six-pack rings and garbage and the grocery bags, right?
Exactly. But
that's,
know, maybe metaphorically we can create some sort of boat to float on, and, you know, that's where I find, you know, people, like, doing the good work, you know, like Yes Magazine.
Yeah.
Frances Moore LePay is a regular contributor, and she was on Book TV and talked about her book Eco Mind. And she got into the kind of spiritual and psychological aspects of this earth destruction that's going on. And she's like, you know, I'm not optimistic about what's going on, but I do consider myself a, I think she called herself a possibilist or possibilitarian.
It's a good word.
Yeah, she knows how it can be flipped. She knows what's possible, that there are solutions or at least ways to ameliorate the problems. And even with the issue of empire, which seems so out of control and beyond our reach, it's important to keep in mind examples like England, which after World War II, for the most part, not entirely, but to a large degree, they did kind of give up their empire. And out of the wreckage of the war, they decided to do things like... you know, instead of investing in making sure the sun never sets on the British Empire, they invested in things like universal health care. And there is that bit of humanity for all these decades.
Yeah.
People are still defending it. You know, there's a pretty...
Well, we need to come to some sort of... And it has to be on a global basis. I was thinking about this the other day when I saw that the Prime Minister of... the Maldives had been overthrown in a coup.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a man who, in order to draw attention to the pressing crisis nature that his country faced, once held a cabinet meeting underwater.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
And it wasn't some publicity stunt. It was a reflection of what is happening to the Maldives. And we've got to have some sort of global awakening or existential realization that really this is all we've got. That for all of Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist's hopes for a moon base with 13,000 people who can declare statehood, and, you know, the little science fiction part of me goes, yeah, cool, okay.
It will probably
we're
be a
stuck here.
Gated community, no less.
I am sure. And 12,000 of those people will be slave labor. No more air for you. But really, I mean, it's a closed loop and a closed system. And the funny thing is, for instance, when you talk to one of these right-wing religion industry fundamentalists, they always use, and I forget the name of the philosopher, but it's Pascal's. It's Pascal's wager.
Mm-hmm.
They say, well, you know, oh, what if you're right and there's no God? What does it harm you if you live a good, upright Christian life? And if you look up Pascal's wager, you'll find out how profoundly flawed it is. But they like to cite that. But by the same token, Preston, if we take the frothy one at his word, and indeed the global climate crisis is just a great big hoax.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do we lose if we clean up the planet and we make the air and the water cleaner? And we have less cancer and less heart disease and less endocrine disorders. What do we lose out of that? Because as far as I can tell, we actually gain because of the money that doesn't get lost in dealing with all those healthcare crises.
Yeah. You know, that's another point Frances Morlepay makes. You know, she's like, you know, this economy claims to be so efficient and...
it's anything but...
Yeah, it's wasteful and it's destructive.
And consumptive.
Yeah. And, you know, we won't have all those oil spills in the Gulf and in Nigeria and in Ecuador. We won't be taking down a forest the size of Florida and Canada. By the way, there's another pipeline that's already, I don't know if it's completed yet, but on top of the XL pipeline, which at least...
Well, there's Keystone 1 and Keystone 2.
Right. There's another one called the Alberta Clipper, and that moves the tar sands oil to the Great Lakes area to be refined. So, again, those Halliburton maps I remember from my security guard days, they're laying them down. But again, there was this amazing resistance. Nebraska Cornhusker fans, actually...
There were Republicans who objected to having that thing go through the biggest aquifer in the United States.
So that, you know, that's what the Becks and those others fear so much, that we begin to realize how much in common regular people have.
Well, exactly. It's like what Sandra and I were talking about with the Affordable Care Act. If you look, for instance, at the Medicaid provisions and the means testing and everything is a couple or 300% of the poverty level, then that means somebody with three kids the traditional American nuclear family of two spouses and two kids or three kids or whatever, they're going to be eligible for Medicaid. It ain't going to cost them a damn dime. No mandate, no nothing. At which point they are participating in national health care.
Mm-hmm.
Administered on a state-by-state basis. But they, and you know what? When that kicks in and that's available to somebody who works at Walmart, you know what? They're going to love it because they're not going to sit there and sweat bullets because little Johnny or little Susie is sick or more importantly, because, you know, chips and stuff is out there, more importantly, when mommy or daddy and daddy or mommy and mommy, when one of them gets sick, it's not going to be a matter of losing everything or going to work. It's not going to be a matter of can't go to the doctor anymore. It'll be appropriately treated, and we'll move on. And the minute that this is the unstated thing, it's so important because the right wing can't even talk about it. That's where all this business about the government dependence and you're losing your liberty. comes from. Okay, because I think the right wing knows that they can't even mention it. I mean, it is the Voldemort of the Affordable Care Act, because if the American people find out that people with a couple of kids making $50,000 a year can have access to health care,
mm-hmm.
Well, and they're going to look at the Republican Party and say, F you, mister.
Yep. They're really working hard to keep people's minds off of that sort of revelation instead of...
Yeah, because Obama's going to send the Christians to the guillotine so he can have his Obamacare. I mean, honestly, really?
Yeah.
I mean, how is that not kissing Pinky Tuscadero and jumping the shark?
Right.
Well, Preston, it has been a lovely conversation. I'm glad you called in. I always am glad when you call in. Enjoy the snow while it lasts. You'll probably have 70 degrees next week.
Yeah, most likely. And hopefully you'll get a little taste of winter at some point.
Well, I'm a little spoiled right now because it occurred to me yesterday that this time last year, I was my family and I were swanning around the Caribbean, and that's a tough memory as the snow is falling. It really is.
And good luck with your crock pot feast. That sounds great.
I think that's a good idea. I'm going to try to make it happen. Preston, have a wonderful evening.
You too, Bob.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Our good buddy Preston, the Horns resident optimist, calling from Denver. Let's see, a couple of trips down the email. Going back to Kathy down in Arizona with regard to the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. Remember, Bob, that periodically some Catholic bishops threatens to hold their holy communion from a politician who votes against their church doctrine. We need to bring back the political cartoons of decades ago that showed a wicked-looking pope as a puppeteer and the politician as the marionette. And, you know, they did that to people like Kennedy, and it didn't apply because, you know, President Kennedy was going to hew his own path. But you can't say that anymore, because basically the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops are demanding that we sacrifice the entirety of our secular society to their particular doctrine. Now, I guess this is a rhetorical question, but how in the hell is that any different from the voiced fears of the weirdos in places like Oklahoma Stan that the Muslims are going to bring Sharia law? Because I will be diddly damned if I'm going to kiss anybody's old ring. I just won't. The book, by the way, that I was thinking about, Darlene wrote in, that's Food Rules by Michael Pollan. Rule one, eat mostly plants, especially leaves. Isaac out there enjoying this evening's food porn segment. Patty, those tiny, tiny bananas, those were bananitos, she tells me. Yummy. They are wonderful. So there we have... And all I've got to do is behave myself. That's all. One more trip to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Okay. You'll have that. It's about 5 minutes before the hour, and I wanted to thank those of you who contributed this evening. We got close. We got close to raising what we needed for the evening, but we didn't quite need it. So anybody else that would care to help out, it would be very, very much appreciated. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, as is the snail mail address. And again, if you just log into your PayPal account and do the send, bobkincaid@gmail.com, that's the address that the whole thing is tied to. And you can click personal and gift, and there won't be any transfer charges taken out of your kind gift to keep the horn on the air. So, wow, what a thorn in the side Thursday it has been. Purple squirrels and racist bananas in Pittsburgh high schools and... Huh? Yeah. By the way, just a brief mention, congratulations. Congratulations to some folks in Washington, D.C. I don't know if you're aware of this, but Cliff Schechter, Alex Lawson, and Kimon Freeman have basically taken over WPWC 1480 AM in the D.C. area, and they're calling it We Act Radio. They have literally restored progressive radio to Washington, D.C., and in fact, I guess you could say that they're kind of a kid sister to the Horn, because they are also streamed via the good offices of Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Isn't Ben amazing? Like I said, this is the 10th anniversary year, and I've got to get Ben on the air at some point just to talk about the history of the White Rose Society. But yeah, congratulations to AM 1480 We Act Radio in Washington, D.C. I saw the story over at Alternet, and the pitch for it in the email was, hang on, it's right here. Bringing progressive talk radio back. I was like, what? I didn't know it'd been gone. Back to Washington, D.C. A very liberal, progressive oriented town in terms of folks who live there and work there every day. And really weird that there was no progressive radio there, and Cliff Schechter and company have taken it upon themselves to set things to rights. So congratulations to them. Well, thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. You who contribute to keep it all going, as well as with your thoughts and your ideas, your emails, your phone calls, your participation in the chat room. Thank you. Thank you to our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky. Thanks to our news ninjas, Susan and Gene. Thank you to our blogger, Texas Betsy, to our op-ed correspondent, Reverbo, to my head writer, David, in Tennessee, and thanks to John Fox, who does so many things. And a little reminder, by the way, there will be a PRISM West Virginia American History chat on Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, so tune in for that. And thanks, of course, to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Go there, sign up for the email newsletter, maybe buy yourself a T-shirt, maybe contribute, join up however way you wish, and become a part of the ongoing struggle to bring justice to this unjustly treated land. crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! reached the midway point of the week. It is the 8th day of February 2012, and let's begin with appropriate huzzas and congratulations and hopes for many happy returns. Birthday wishes going out both to my eldest daughter, Margie, and to the Horn's chief engineer, webmaster, web designer, multifaceted, multi-talented musician, John Fox, and darn fine front of house and monitors guy into the bargain. Happy birthday to the both of you. Margie is an adult today. Margie turned 18. It's time for that. You are now liable for all of your act speech. But we'll save that for tomorrow, because who wants that on their birthday, right? The law now, well, to the extent that the law has any mercy on kids under 18. But welcome to the merciless world. And, of course, I guess it's another anniversary of sorts. I was thinking today, when I was thinking about Margie's birthday, I was thinking about where we celebrated the last one. Wow. We celebrated the last birthday Margie had aboard the MS Eurodam somewhere in the Caribbean. I think we were on our way from Fort Lauderdale to Grand Turk was our first stop, and we celebrated aboard ship. And you know what? Birthdays in the Caribbean are a lot more fun than birthdays in wild, wonderful, almost level West Virginia. I mean, they just are. But it was a nice time last year. And I was reminded also, I was thinking about the birthday, and today we got snow, finally. The first snow that we've seen probably in something around a month's time, really, when you get right down to it. There's a dusting of snow on the ground. Not quite the same as a bright golden haze on the meadow or the corn is as high as an elephant's eye. But, no, we got snow today, and I was thinking, somewhere, down in the absolutely stunningly blue water regions of the Caribbean, some guy is sitting somewhere with a coconut shell with an umbrella sticking out of it, thinking, ha! Take that! Because I kind of did a little bit of that myself. It probably involved a Cuban cigar. But no, it's amazing just to look back on where one was a year ago. And that's where we were because of a very, very generous, kind, and downright loving gift that sent us, all of us, this little tribe of ours, sent us on the our good friend Fancy came to term the Lib boat. The Libs aren't cruising the Caribbean this year. They're waiting until June or something to go into the frigid reaches of New England and Canada, and sail up in the colder climes. You know, get your parka on and go sailing in June. So that's when the next Progressive Voices cruise is taking place, leaving Boston and winding up, I think, in Montreal. June. that was your sister-in-law, was it, Jug of Punch? She's in the Virgin Islands right now. Virgin Islands are a very nice place. Even the American part. Because they don't really think of themselves as being American. And that can be a good thing sometimes. But anyway, we have reached the middle of the week. It's not just hump day. It's not just downhill to Friday. No, no, no. It is that most special days of the week. It is prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. So we will, brethren and sistren, we will bring the minister of music forward for the offertory hymn. And as the plate passes, you might notice in the bottom of the plate there is a little button that says PayPal. And when you press that, you are able to help support the Horn. We are still in catch-up mode, trying to catch up with actually pulling even and having the necessary funds to continue from month to month to month. And so as much or more than ever, your kind contributions are important. And, you know, 10 bucks at a time, you know, if we can get 10 folks to do 10 bucks, we'll be done with tonight's fundraising and can catch up, well, last night's fundraising, and can catch up on some of tonight's. So the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. But a reminder, if instead of using that, you want to make sure that none of your PayPal donation is eaten up in fees, if you just PayPal directly to the associated email address, which is bobkincaid@gmail.com, that's the PayPal email address, what you will find is that you can check off a box that says personal and gift, and there will be no fees attached. So that's worth considering. As the plate passes among us, and our minister of music leads us in praiseful singing. Brother Minister of Music, if you would, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah. Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Present for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, he's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Oh, Hudson Ralston on the real raw and a brawler suet. I love you. This is Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn, and I am Archpope Uber Imam Supreme Rabbi Animated Animist Bob Kincaid. And I encourage you to quit fiddle-faddling around out in the vestibule and trying to make edible those inedible butter mints from 20 years ago still a-sitting there in the bowl because we're entirely too cheap to purchase new ones. There are some things that can be accomplished in this life, and that ain't one of them. Not even by the miraculous moving hand of the ruler of the universe. No hallelujah glory it cannot be. So quit fooling around and come on down that blood-red aisle and fall on your knees in front of the sub, in front of the altar, and lay your hands upon the subwoofer glory and feel the rays of common sense a-flowing through you and cleansing your mind and body of spiritualism and sickening superstitious behavior. Yes, hallelujah, glory. Feel it. Let it wash over you. Oh, I may have to start doing this show in one of them Under Armour T-shirts and a vest and get me some Eddie Long 20-inch circumference biceps and wipe myself with prayer hankies and sell them off on the eBay or some such. Yes, indeedy, it's Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn, and I want you to know that the spiritual watchdogs and guardians out there looking out for the moral health and well-being of America have been hard at work, brethren and sistren, hard at work. I offer for your consideration, hallelujah, glory, that man of God, who likes to see children beaten until they cry real tears, yes, James Dobson, showing up yesterday
showing up yesterday, the 7th of February, on Family Talk. Family Talk Radio, sponsored by the American Family Association, the People for the Family, Families for Righteousness, anyway, showed up on Family Talk, along with Daniel Lapin, L-A-P-I-N, Lapin, I think that's French for rabbit. And they have the Holy Ghost gift of understanding, brethren and sisters, and they know what it is that has led us to this dire place in America this very day, where we find ourselves in such a demonic quandary.
In the mid to late 1990s, Bill Clinton, as president, had an affair with Monica Lewinsky. And the popular culture and the elites in the media and in government rose to his defense.
They rose.
And said that character really doesn't matter. What matters is that a president is able to do his job properly. And the moral aspect was discounted. And something changed in our culture, not just about Bill Clinton, but about our attitudes toward our leaders being involved in illicit sexuality. And we're seeing it right now on a number of fronts. I'm going to have to really
don't he sound like a septuagenarian
castrati? One of our candidates has been an admitted womanizer, and he has indicated even to me that he's been forgiven for that, and only God knows, and I accept that.
But for Bill Clinton.
The attitude of the public toward that has changed. Mm-hmm. It is reflective of what happened in the 1990s.
Because you notice how he says Bill Clinton, Bill Clinton, Bill Clinton, but he can't quite bring himself to say Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist. Isn't that interesting? They can say Bill Clinton, they can't say Newt Gingrich. He is represented in this script by one of our candidates. That's an interesting possessive pronoun there, that our, Dr. Dobson. Of course, you couldn't apply a Band-Aid without coming nigh to killing somebody doctoring that way. Educational doctorate from the University of Spoiled Children, University of Southern California. I find this clip interesting because, among other things, brothers and sisters, don't you remember when it all came out about Monica and her thong and the pizza and the cigar and the stained dress and all of that $70 million the pornographic report that upstanding fine Christian man Kenneth Starr produced for God and everybody to read? Don't you remember how when that all came out, Bill Clinton got Jesse Jackson to come pray with him, and lots of other people. Dalai Lama come and pray with him. I may have gone and prayed with the Pope for all I know, and even went so far as to travel down and see that dried out old husk of a huckster, Billy Graham, down there, and knelt and they cried and they prayed for forgiveness. And oddly enough, Dr. James Dobson doesn't remember any of that, but he does know that Newt Dunn told him he's been forgive. And you heard Dr. Dobson. Only God knows, and I accept that. But the public attitude done changed. Now, why in the world did it change? Well, you know what? It's that naked lady in the Garden of Eden what had a conversation with a gossipy water moccasin and took a bite of the illicit fruit. I think it was a kumquat, not an apple. And it just it turned open the gates because she got a bite of that kumquat and she went a-running over to Adam and said, "Hoo, Adam, I'm all worked up, let's get it on." And the Barry White music started playing, and and it's been sin ever since. But boy, it's gotten awful bad. You got to hear Brother LePan Lappin, whatever his name is. Yes.
Once you remove the religious restraints to rampant sexuality.
Sounds a lot like Hannibal Lecter, doesn't he?
And all you've got to do is relax those religious restraints, and male nature will take care of the rest and bring about the decline of a civilization. One of the mechanisms is, of course, as we've...
They can't help it, can they? All you've got to do is relax those religious restraints. Yeah, just loosen them up so you can wiggle some. Yeah, relax the religious restraints. Oh, Dr. Freud, we've got another winner over here. Bring the toaster. Now, what is it that happens after you loosen up the religious restraints?
As we've discussed, economic. Because, in a sense, it requires the same kind of control and self-discipline.
Oh, self-discipline. I've been a very bad, bad man. Ooh, I'll spank myself. Self-discipline. Maybe they can wear one of them little barbed wire things like the Opus Dei people have down on their thighs, you know, whatever.
Every single morning and go to work, whether you like it or not, as it takes to restrain various appetites.
Oh, appetites? You mean like that scene from, Kim Basinger and Mickey Rourke and 9 1/2 weeks and the refrigerator scene with the strawberries and the whipped cream and the rutabagas. Those appetites.
And so when you weaken one muscle, you weaken everything else as well.
Especially the love muscle.
And not only do we have a tendency on the part of a society that has relaxed all form of sexual restraint.
That's two references to restraint by this upstanding, God-fearing Christian man.
To also go into free fall economically. But what also happens is that such a society tends towards becoming a more feminine society, in a sense.
Yeah, you get tied up, and the next thing you know, the next thing you know, the men are just marching around in stunning little cocktail frocks. That becomes a feminine society, bunch of sissies. Probably won't even ride a horse, don't know how to ride no horse, nor get all greasy, or play mumbledy peg, or knock the chip off in somebody's shoulder and get into a good drunken bar brawl. Dadgum them feminine societies.
Islam, fundamentalist Islam, which is essentially a brutal and violent culture, is seducing a somewhat feminized American culture because...
Huh? What, Edith? Huh?
Fundamentalist Islam is seducing a somewhat effeminized American culture. How is that, Brother Rabbit?
Because there's no other way to explain the love affair that America's left-wing and secularized elites have with Islam.
There's a love affair going on, And I'm all left wing, and I didn't even know about it? Well, probably just as well Agnes wouldn't let me go. Then again, I don't want to have no affair with no fundamentalist of any stripe. But, well, this is a recurring theme. Because, you got to consider right-wing talk show host Steve Deese. Steve Deese. And you know how there was talk, Brother Lappin there, Brother Rabbit, Brer Rabbit? Oh, now I understand. Yeah, Brother Rabbit there was talking about how it's all about the religious restraints and our appetites and, you know, I got a taste for kumquats. I'm sorry, kumquats is just a fun word. I don't care. It's funny. All them appetites. Well, them appetites will apparently lead you to some pretty nasty places. At least that's according to Greg Quinlan of Parents and Friends of Gays and Ex-Gays, otherwise known as PFOX. No, really. He's also with the New Jersey Family Policy Council. Yeah, see, you thought that they were all just out west or right-wing rednecks from the south, you know, Tupelo, Mississippi. No, they in New Jersey, too. And, well, never mind the explanation. We'll just let Greg Quinlan do it himself. Let Greg do it.
You're absolutely right. I like the word that you used there, cannibalize, because there is a scientific term that's called that. I want to have sex with that man so I can be like him, so I can become a part of him. It's a sexual, emotional cannibalization. That person is something I want. They look better than I do. They're more muscular than I am. They're more virile than I am, or whatever the reason is.
Like Eddie Long?
Something I want. And it's called it's a type of what we call an emotional or sexual cannibalism. And I can't describe it any better than that.
What's wrong with anti-bullying? I mean, Greg, why wouldn't we want to stop kids from getting picked on, or is there something else happening here?
Well, it's an agenda. We're making martyrs out of kids that we're recruiting to behave as homosexuals when no one is born that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem, and that's the issue.
They can't help themselves, can they? They have to go to these places that betray their very essential, hung up, nailed down, twisted, chandelier swinging weirdnesses. Got to be talking about the cannibals. Sexual cannibalism. But really, I would like to bully this person myself. I don't believe in bullying. Well, it wouldn't be bullying now, would it? It wouldn't be bullying. Because when you punch a bully in the nose and his nose blossoms up real good, he learns maybe to quit bullying. Oh, I see, there I go again. I mean that metaphorically. I am nonviolent. I don't punch anybody, no matter how strong the urge can be sometimes to do that. Why? Because of this remark about children. We're making martyrs out of kids that we're recruiting to behave as homosexuals. It was a week or so ago. Teenage boy down in the Kanawha Valley, about 60, 70 miles from here, got run over by a train. He liked to listen to music on his iPod every day when he walked 3 miles home from school. And he walked along the railroad tracks. He never heard the train's horn blowing. What's that got to do with bullying, Bob? Well, this. The young man walked 3 miles home to school every day because he couldn't stand to get on the bus. Because he was different. His hair was kind of long and stringy and scraggly, and the music he liked was metal. And so naturally, the fine, upstanding followers of Christ in his school, the good children, don't you know, berated him every day, calling him things like faggot. What are you listening to, faggot? Listening to some more of your faggot music, faggot? And they'd take a cheap shot or a pot shot at him occasionally on the bus. So, you know, the young man was not unintelligent. He just decided to absent himself from the presence of those fine, God-fearing, upstanding Christians. Because no one could make it safe for him to ride the bus. No one could make it safe for him to travel 3 lousy miles on a bus because the Christians wouldn't lay off of him. Because the Christians tormented him just like they tormented their Lord, don't you know? And this sick freak, Greg Quinlan, this miserable, pathetic example of a member of the human race. This misanthrope. Says that that young boy died not because he was tormented and tortured by his Christian allies, but because he had been recruited to behave as a homosexual. Does that make any sense to you? Because it doesn't to me. Unless you simply take it in the context of the typical behavior of these people who follow a religion that is grounded first and foremost in nothing, nothing, nothing but the most vicious and miserable forms of hate. And this being a political year, it is absolutely busting out all over. A million American moms, they're Jesus people too, are going to try to break the back of JCPenney. I'm sure you've heard this, right? What did JCPenney do to earn the ire of these fundamentalists? Have they put up a diorama about evolution? No. They just hired Ellen DeGeneres as their spokesperson. Because lots of people find Ellen DeGeneres entertaining and funny and witty and charming and safe and affirming. You know, straight people and gay people alike. Men and women. Whatever. She's a joy. But not to the followers of Christ. No. Brian Fisher of the American Family Association Radio by the way, last week he claimed that Bill Clinton is responsible for the rise in oral cancer in this country. It has nothing to do with, you know, ground up tobacco or anything like that. No, he says this latest, will America's young women be just a bit more likely to experiment with lesbianism now that JCPenney is mainstreaming it? JCPenney isn't mainstreaming lesbianism. They just hired Ellen DeGeneres as a... never mind. To any objective observer, the answer must be yes. Any? Objective? Because I'd say that anybody who objectively observes this, the only conclusion they could draw from those statements is that Brian Fisher is crazier than a shithouse rat. To any objective observer, the answer must be no. That's an answer to the question, is this a good thing? You know, the part about young women being more likely to experiment with lesbianism. You know, whenever you watch Brian Fisher on the YouTube or the TV box or whatever over at American Family Association, it's always a waist-up shot, nothing below the desk. I can guarantee you that when he gets to the lesbianism parts, there's a damn fine reason for it. Research, says Brian Fisher, has indicated that lesbians suffer from increased levels of depression, suicidal ideation, substance abuse, breast cancer, and vaginal diseases compared to heterosexual women. Now, of course, he doesn't mention that this is research that he came up with by going down the hall and talking to various fundamentalists. Hey, Martha Sue... Yeah, Martha Sue, do you reckon if you was a lesbian, you'd be more likely to have some sort of god-awful crotch rot? I would, Brother Brian, I would. It's bad enough with what Joe Bob brings home anyway. I'm sure the damn thing would just be about rotten off. Mary Ellen, have you ever had breast cancer? Well, no. Have you ever done any of them lesbian things? Well, no! Well, see, that's why you haven't had the breast cancer. as for the depression, the suicidal ideation, and the substance abuse, Brian Fisher is just too damn dumb to realize that maybe it's the way he and other Christians treat gay people that has to do with the depression and the suicidal ideation and the substance abuse. But that is way too far out there for the likes of Brian Fisher to understand. But, well, them million moms, well, the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi, has their backs. And they understand. They understand. Buster Wilson, no, really. Buster Wilson and Fred Jackson, really, really, understand what it is that makes Ellen DeGeneres so dangerous to America.
Casey Penny has employed Ellen DeGeneres as their new national spokesperson. So they're rebranding themselves. Well, they brought in Ellen DeGeneres, who happens to be very popular in the culture.
Mm-hmm.
She is. There's no doubt about that. But we just don't believe that Ellen DeGeneres is wholesome family. She is known. She made her name by being the first real television star to come out in her homosexuality.
Well, you kind of mentioned it. What makes Ellen DeGeneres dangerous is that she's a nice person, and I haven't watched her program, but apparently she does an interesting kind of funny program.
I haven't watched it because I don't want to catch the lesbianism. You can do it. Cut the rays, they come right through your television set. Glory, hallelujah, they do. The dangerous thing. This coming from a Christian. No, really. The dangerous thing about Ellen DeGeneres is that she's a nice person. You know, like Christians are supposed to be.
So she does a good job of masking her very active role in the homosexual agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And she's extremely active in that agenda. But she,
you know, to this day, as gay as he is, Peter Godbold has still never received a copy of the Homosexual Agenda. I can tell you, I remember from back in the day when Peter was hosting America's, at that time, only five-night-a-week gay-hosted, gay-oriented radio program on the Horn. It was called Strictly Confidential. I can remember him talking about how depressing he found it that nobody would provide him a copy of the Homosexual Agenda. It's very secret. It's almost... It could quite possibly be. I think it is. It is more secret than the protocol than the protocols of the elders of Zion.
She doesn't go out on her program, I understand, and do that. But here's, you know, she's known. But
do what? I mean, go a tongue wrestling with some other woman on her program? Well, did Oprah with what's his name? I mean, has anybody ever seen the Maury Povich or Jerry Springer go to smollicking around on one of them women that's flaunting her and hollering for Jerry beads? But you know what? That Ellen DeGeneres with her agenda, she's the one that's more likely. She has to struggle not to just go a kissing on every woman in the audience because that's how they are.
Buster, JCPenney knew exactly what it was doing when they hired Ellen DeGeneres. They know she's a homosexual activist, that she is out there fighting for greater homosexual rights.
Yeah, being extremely popular with Americans of all stripe had nothing whatsoever to do with the decision, you got to understand. Right? Yeah. God. Jim noting, Bob, no real Christian, I mean real Christian, would do this. God protect me from such pretenders. But that's the problem, Jim. Brian Fisher and Buster What's-His-Nuts and James Dobson all believe the same thing that the rest of the Christians believe. They are Christians. I haven't seen the Lutheran Church or the Episcopals or the Presbyterians or the Baptists or the Methodists or the Greek Orthodox or the Roman Catholics say that these people aren't Christians. They are Christians. They really, really are. They just happen to use Christianity as a springboard for the hate that rules the rest of their lives on other days besides Sunday. Ron and Raleigh with a question. How in the name of Liberace do these straight upstanding Christians know so much about the inner workings of the homosexual mind? Just asking. A lot of us have been asking that question for a long time, Ron. You know, there's a little bit of Shakespeare in a lot of it. You know, methinks they doth protest too much. Sandra noting that lap fuck is horrible. He has big issues with sex. I think he's a right-wing rabbi. That may be that guy. Michael. Bullying! Doing this again after last week with Brother Woody? Just tell us you're going to do this until we hit that PayPal deal. Heaven help the clergy. Oh, that's a thought. Fundraising is blackmail. No, for that I get out the Lee Greenwood. You really don't want to make me do that. But it's, it's important to hear these goons. Because this is the loving, tender kindness of the followers of the Prince of Peace, who argue that a boy bullied literally right off his school bus was somehow being encouraged to be a homosexual martyr. I take this a little bit seriously, and perhaps more seriously than most, because I can tell you that, for instance, my son is the girl, well, I guess it's impossible to be 16 and the girl craziest guy in the world. But, you know, in sixth grade, he was getting jumped in the school and getting stomped while the students sat around and watched the stompings take place, you know, good little Christian children. And the person doing the stomping was screaming, faggot, faggot, faggot. Apparently, I've gotten under Sandra's skin. Oh, please, unlike this asshole's hateful agenda. You know what? I'd rather have the gay agenda than their agenda any day of the week, because their agenda appears to be filled with poison. Ray noting, funny how the very nature of the stories covered on Prayer Meeting Wednesday never change. Wonder why that is. Damn, these people are consistent. Damn, these people are hateful. But, I mean, there are other stories. They say that the state of Alabamistan, for instance, is the buckle of the Bible Belt. I mean, you can't swing a butterfly net in Alabama without hitting the church somewhere, or a member thereof, or a preacher thereof. I mean, they got lots of them, all kinds. But they've also got a hateful little immigration bill, right in line with what Mitt Romney says about wanting the foreigners to self-deport, right? Now, let's assume for a moment, and no, we're not assuming, because it's actually the law of this nation and has been the settled law for in excess of 100 years, that regardless of whomever your parents are, if you are born here in these United States, you are a American citizen, right? The right wing and the upstanding, God-fearing followers of Jesus therein like to refer to such children as anchor babies, because it allows their filthy immigrant parents to remain anchored here in the United States, because they've got children that the Constitution, instead of God, that the Constitution says is citizens. Right? Remember, fine, upstanding Christians passed the immigration bill in the state of Alabama. There was not a Muslim among the voters. There was not an atheist among the people who voted for Alabama's immigration bill. Every last one of them Well, maybe there were a couple of Jews, if there are any left. No, there are some left in Alabama. But I even doubt any Jews voted for this immigration bill. This is a Christian immigration bill. You know, this is the one that got the Mercedes executive arrested because his papers wasn't in order. This is the Christian immigration bill that makes sure that people can't get water or electricity services if there's any taint of illegality about their presence in the state of Alabama. This is the Christian immigration bill that has even prevented people from getting a library card in the state of Alabama. And all of this, of course, taking place in the most Christian state of Alabamistan. The Southern Poverty Law Center is now contemplating a lawsuit against the state of Alabama. Because children who are American citizens but happen to be marked with the brand of Cain in that their skin is a little bit darker than, say, coffee with a whole bunch of half and half in it. Those children have been denied access to food by the God-fearing Christian state of Alabama. American citizens in Alabama who happen to be children whose parents are undocumented immigrants have been denied food stamps because of the HB 56 bill that Christians enacted in Alabama. But it's not just Alabamistan. Last month, out in the land of Kansas, bleeding Kansas, we talked about bleeding Kansas last night toward the end of the program. Last month, Kansas moved to change its food aid program, removing more than 1,000 families from the rolls of those eligible for its food assistance program, even if the children, understanding that the children were American citizens, but if their mommy and daddy was one of them damned illegals, no food for you! And again, there aren't just a hell of a lot of Muslims or atheists in Kansas, and especially not in elected positions of power. That decision was made by Christians, by followers of Christ Jesus, and signed into law, if it required a signature, by a man who ballyhoos his Christianity at every conceivable turn, namely a vicious, hate-filled sack of pus by the name of Sam Brownback. This is Christianity. Gone are the days of suffering little children. Gone are the days of, if you've done it unto the least of these my brothers, you've done it also unto me. But let's add in a little bit of good news to this mix. Breaking news just coming in from both Maura and Dr. John. In Washington State, and I know this will do our dear friend Jude and others in Washington a world of good, in terms of a moment of happiness. The House in the state of Washington just put its stamp of approval on marriage equity there. It's already passed the Senate of the state of Washington. And the governor has indicated that the bill will be signed into law so that there can be full constitutional equality in the state of Washington. One more step toward a nation of laws and not of men. Ray noting by email, wherever the right wing stashed their morals and brains, somebody lost the key. I don't think they ever had any to stash. It was all parsley flakes, you know. Ray also asking, let's say photographs of Jesus existed, which of course would not be glossies of a pretty white man. Wonder how many right-wing churches would display them. Oh, that is a penetrating question. Brother Whackbottom, who's that scary dark man you got to hang a picture in the vestibule? Why, that's Jesus, sister. Ain't neither. Yeah. But at least we have some good news out of the state of Washington. Elsewhere, you know, the frothy one won himself three primaries. One of them was just beauty pageant. That was Missouri. But he won Minnesota and Colorado, and suddenly Willard Romney is... Why don't they like me? What do they got against magic underwear? Right. It's cold outside. And it's hard to escape the fact that, well, even though I got my pink self... I did. I looked like Captain Pike. There's the first Star Trek reference of the evening. Even though that happened, and even though I was burnt to a frazzle, dadgum, didn't I enjoy getting burnt to a frazzle. I know, skin cancer, right, yes. But when you're coming out of, I think it was something like 10 degrees when we got on the plane in Charleston here, headed for Fort Lauderdale to pick up the boat. And stepping out into those 70 degrees in Fort Lauderdale, hell, it couldn't have been any more different than it was for Dorothy coming out of black and white Kansas into color Oz. It's something you don't soon forget. So that's where we begin this prayer meeting Wednesday edition of the Horn. Of course, you know how to reach the program, right? The toll-free number is 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Direct dialing is 304-658-3333. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. And by the way, don't forget, if you feel inclined, check out the chat room, headonradionetwork.com/chatroom. It's a merry little time in there. We'll take a little break and come back. Your calls, your emails, the conversation that creates the idea that motivates this entire process, Conversation Radio. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Total Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Total Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, it's stuff for my dog.
Holy crap. There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Total Genius. We got your soap right here.
And don't forget about that body stuff.
www.doublegenius.com.
About 4 minutes before the hour, so we'll start hour two a little bit early. That's a bonus that gives us more time to talk. Just answering a quick question coming in from Sandra. I mentioned Mitt Romney and his magic underwear. She said, can you explain the underwear deal with Romney? Well, yes. When you are a Mormon, and it's set up on similar terms as the medieval Roman Catholic Church, you know, where the richer you were, the more sanctified you were. And it's largely the same deal with Scientology. When you get to be like a 33rd degree noble planetary overlord or a temple builder or whatever the term is in the Mormon Church, you get to wear what they call temple vestments. You can go, you can buy them all over Utah, or at least at the temple there, the temple store, you know, they sell, you know, little miniature statues of Joseph Smith, you know, mini wives or whatever. I'm not, you know, some of this stuff, but no, really. They're referred to as vestments or garments, but the Mormons themselves refer to it offhandedly as magic underwear, and that's the underwear you wear forevermore. It has to be right next to your skin. So, like, if you're a good Mormon woman and you've got a hankering for something cute or sexy or something, say from Victoria's Secret, you gotta wear the angel push-up over top of your temple vestments so that you will be forever reminded of something. Your various and sundry lacy, frilly whatevers, your BVD, everything goes on because the vestments have to be next to the skin. I mean, you get buried in them because it's. Don't ask me why. I mean, why do you have to eat a cracker and, you know, why do you have to ring bells in Buddhism or, don't ask the why is always impossible to answer with any sort of religious flim-flammery. But yeah, that's the magic underwear. And your hotshot Mormons who are up at the top of the pyramid, they don't look at it as have to, they get to, because, I mean, it's not just anybody that can wear this magic underwear. You gotta be, somebody. And it's not like you can get gold-edged magic underwear. It's all just very plain, very white, very cotton. I guess you've got several sets. It's kind of, if I recall the pictures I've seen correctly, you know, it's like sort of a bloomer sort of thing for women, and it's kind of I think it's a one-piece union suit affair with short boxer legs for guys. And they've got a mythology that goes with it. You know, that's stopping bullets and stuff. Our research department, my head writer, David in Tennessee, following up, the men's vestments are made by the church for the profit of the church, 100% cotton, styled as short-legged union suit, and oh hell yes, you gots to wear them if you want to be a good Mormon and get your own private planet when you die that'll be peopled up with all the people that done been dead baptized. If you were watching Bill Maher last week, he unbaptized somebody. He got one of those magician's apprentice pointy hats on and did some unbaptizing because one of the people that had been Mormon baptized after death in life wanted nothing to do with religion. So Maher unbaptizing was really quite funny. But yeah, you gotta wear them. And I'm sorry, anybody that wears that and wants to be in government, sorry, you're too weird. Just are. Just saying. But then again, that's like the controversy going on over the business about contraception coverage by church organizations in the Roman Catholic Church. Bishops have been passing a letter around local Roman Catholic churches telling the congregation that the church will defy the law of the United States and will not knuckle under blah, 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 blah. Of course, that goes hand in hand with the fact that many bishops in this country believe that the church has no legal requirement to report child rape to the police either. You know, they just pick the laws and then they run hiding behind the skirts of the First Amendment any time that they get caught with their slip showing, as it were. Onward to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Salam alaikum, Brother Bob. How you doing?
Hey, salam alaikum, Brother Albert. That seems to work.
Oh, did that go? Wait, that went over the air? We were live?
We are.
The liberal secret's out.
Oh, God, it is. Oh, our long-standing feminized love affair with fundamentalist Islam has been exposed.
Hey, well, while we're at it, namaste, Brother Bob. Namaste, everybody in the Horn family.
Yeah, that too.
Well, I just went further east. You know, these people are crazy. This is crazy. This is crazy. Contraceptives. That was my main thing. I remember I heard that on the radio just quick, and I just looked up at the mirror at myself and went, what? What? What are you talking about? For real?
I know, and your family is like, oh, dear, Daddy's on one again.
Uh-oh. Get on that phone. Go call Brother Bob. All right, I'm on it. I don't even understand. Contraceptive. What do they want? You know what they want? Who else would outlaw contraceptives? Oh, I don't know. Who else? Oh, I don't know. God, I wish we were more enthralled with, you know, than Muslims. Maybe I would put my finger on it. But I don't even comprehend how you're going to even start to... Contraceptives. Contraceptives, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really. Really.
I didn't get to it, but you're going to love this. Because we're going to get to it now. The frothy one, mm-hmm. Bro Fro Mix,
yeah.
The guy who plays with dead fetuses,
yeah.
That are less than 20 weeks developed.
Mm-hmm. Lizards, yeah. No, purple lizards.
Right. Yeah. Jesus, that was awful, but it's true.
Sorry.
That's
all
okay.
Right.
Yeah.
What do you look like?
Yeah, purple tadpole. Like? Purple tadpole. No, he's all flush with his victory in Colorado and Minnesota,
mm-hmm.
and just all kinds of worked up. Never mind the fact that voter turnout between 2008 and 2012. Oh God, the numbers are startling.
That's exactly where I was going.
Mitt Romney's voter turnout just went gone in Missouri. In 2008, he got 172,000 votes. In 2012, he got 63,000. In Minnesota, 25,000 votes in 2008, 8,000 in 2000. Now, these are just the Romney votes. In Colorado, 42,000, down 46% to 22,000. The Secretary of State of Missouri had estimated that voter turnout would be low at 23%. And it didn't get anywhere near. The only people that came out to vote were the really, really psychotically weird ones, Brother Albert.
Yeah, I'm surprised Dr. Ron Paul didn't make more of her. But he really fizzled out, hasn't he?
There was a Dr. Ron Paul story in the New York Times. That was talking about why Dr. Ron Paul is the way Dr. Ron Paul is, and it talks about his upbringing.
Mm.
Now,
they honestly raped people back in the day.
Yeah, he grew up outside Pittsburgh somewhere, or inside Pittsburgh, whatever. And that's where they honestly raped people.
Mm-hmm.
But he was born in 1934 or something. His parents got married the day before the 1929 stock market crash. Mm. His grandfather had fled 19th century Germany running away from ruinous debt.
Mm-hmm.
How about that? Mm-hmm. It's not very libertarian to not pay your debts now, is it?
Yeah, what is that?
No,
huh?
That's called, isn't that called being a deadbeat?
Imagine that.
Yeah, but so he's a kid growing up. He's not old enough to actually serve in World War II, so he's on the home front, right? And I ran across this passage in this Ron Paul story, and it just leaped off the page at me, Brother Albert. Wartime, because remember the World War II, shared sacrifice, everybody was suffering and whether it was meat or tires or gasoline, and everybody was there was scrap metal drives, and everybody raised victory gardens, right? Because we were all in this together.
made cartoons about it, right?
Yeah.
Getting everybody involved. We were all, I mean, it was deep. War bonds, always, right? War bonds.
And if you couldn't afford a bond, you could buy a stamp.
Mm-hmm.
And if you saved up enough stamps, you could exchange the stamp for a whole bond.
Mm-hmm.
That's what my father did. Working after school, heaving bags of groceries down to the Kroger's. And by bags, I don't mean like carrying little old ladies' groceries out. I mean 50 and 75-pound sacks of potatoes and onions and stuff like that. Okay, so this paragraph just jumped off the page at me because I've heard those stories of rationing in the, on the home front. And I know the privations that were involved. So the New York Times article says, wartime rationing also left a mark on Ron Paul. When he saw a... Now, get this, Albert. This William Bill Hicks, peace be upon him, strap in moments. When he, Ron Paul, saw a local butcher shop ignoring the rules on Saturdays and selling, quote, all the meat you wanted at a price, unquote, Mr. Paul wrote, it was, quote, my first real-life experience in the free market solving problems generated by government mischief. You got that? Now, here is some shady-ass butcher in Pittsburgh who can't be bothered to obey the law, and instead, on Saturdays, he ratchets up meat prices and gouges his customers who, well, we haven't had a good T-bone steak in ages. And so all the meat you want at a price, because meat was rationed, because we didn't like the idea of perhaps our troops overseas starving to death.
Mm-hmm.
But at a shady butcher's in Pittsburgh, this was a lesson in libertarian theology to Ron Paul, to disobey the law, to flout the law, to perhaps put at hazard our soldiers in the field, our sailors at sea, our Marines, our pilots.
Oh, yeah, everything for them. They're selfish and greedy, and that's why...
Because it was the free market solving problems generated by government mischief. So it was. Are we to understand from the sick and twisted, cranky mind of Ron Paul... Are we to understand, Albert, that the Second World War was a matter of government mischief?
You know, to try to go down that rabbit hole of their rationalizations, it sort of leads you the same direction. Going down the rabbit hole, all the right-wing, you know, evangelical extremists, you know, all of our, you know, American Christian Taliban, you know, when we sit here and try to follow this thought pattern, it's like you just must have missed, you know, all these fundamental facts of reality. Yeah, it's just like, you know, in terms of history, you sit there, all right, did you know anything about World War II, what happened, so on and so forth? No. I mean, it's just like they don't care. You know, that's why they don't say, oh, we don't need the No Civil Rights Act. You know, we don't need contraception. We don't need condoms. Condoms? What are you going to put condoms on you for? You know how these people are, Brother Bob.
Oh, but it was delightful to see them get shown up in the state of Oklahoma stand recently. I don't know if you heard about this, but it was a beautiful moment. They have one of those fetal personhood laws out there.
Mm-hmm.
And... what's it say here? It recognizes a fetus, quote, at every stage of development with all the rights, privileges, and immunities available to other persons, citizens, and residents of this state. You know, except for that breathing part, then sorry, there's just nothing they can do about that. So it would completely outlaw abortion and several forms of contraception. All right? So bless her heart. State Senator Constance Johnson of Oklahoma City introduced a measure, an amendment to that bill. She wound up withdrawing it, probably because they were burning things on her lawn or something, saying that sperm deserve the same protection as eggs, and that Any action in which a man ejaculates or otherwise deposits semen anywhere but in a woman's vagina shall be interpreted and construed as an action against an unborn child. Oddly enough, they didn't want to pass that. And it just beats the dickens out of me. Why, Albert?
Yeah, I imagine. Why? I can't understand that. Every sperm is sacred, right?
Well, I mean, it would... I mean, I can see why it would outlaw masturbation. And that was probably enough to stop every fine, upstanding, God-fearing Christian member of the Oklahoma legislature right in his tracks.
Yeah, I mean, you can, I mean, what happened? You can't even get a nice massage from a muscular masseuse without breaking the law? What's going on?
Right, you know, I mean, what's the point of sniffing, snorting meth off a gay hooker's butt if you can't complete the transaction? But she did later withdraw the measure, yeah. That is. Another Democrat, though, a guy named Jim Wilson, also tried to amend this legislation, stating, and this is a dandy, that all men would be responsible for the full support and well-being of any woman carrying their child for the duration of the pregnancy, including housing, food, transportation, and all medical costs. They voted on that one, those Christians in Oklahoma Stan. They voted on that one, Brother Albert.
Yeah, how'd that turn out?
Yeah, it went down in freaking flames.
Oh, okay. Oh, but what about personal responsibility? Oh, you don't have to legislate that.
Right, right. Well, you know, because that would be an improper intrusion of government into the world of, yeah.
You know, I mean, man... It really is. They're really going to cotton candy land over here. They're really losing it. They're losing all the marbles, Brother Bob. I mean, look at what we're talking about. For real.
Yeah, I know.
2012. We're talking about this. This is what you want to talk about, right? This right now. Contraceptives. What was the gay agendas? Really?
Oh, and the frothy one has announced another new agenda.
Oh, goodness.
Those agendas, they're just getting, I mean, they're multiplying like rabbits or something, right?
Because I said namaste, right?
Probably. Well, yeah, I mean, it's all sort of out in the open now, isn't it, Albert? The frothy one went on Radio Rwanda this morning. And he said, And this is a quote here. I'm out. Could you just FedEx me a bottle of that winter brandy you keep handy there, Albert? Because there's moments where you really could use it.
I'm telling you. I didn't even see this winter. Forget it. What winter?
We got an eighth of an inch of snow today.
Oh my goodness! Careful on the roads.
I actually looked at the snow shovel. It's been feeling rather ignored, like that, you know, like those sad little dirt particles in the Swiffer commercials. But no, the frothy one was on Radio Rwanda, and he said, and it was all about the contraceptive care regulations, and, you know, Obama's trying to, yada, yada, yada. And what they've done here is a direct assault on the First Amendment. Not only a direct assault on the freedom of religion by forcing people specifically to do things that are against their religious teachings. This is, and here's the fun part. This is the blow off at the Magic Act, okay? This is a president who just recently in this Hosanna Tabor case was basically making the argument that Catholics had to, you know, maybe even had to go so far as to hire women priests to comply with employment discrimination issues. This is a very hostile president to people of faith. He's a hostile president, not just to people of faith, but to all freedoms.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. You know, yeah.
No, for that, you want, you know, you don't want just, I mean, you want the brandy bottle for moments like that, Albert, but you don't want to just swig it straight out. No, you want one of those twisty, curly-cue straws where you can watch it go up into your mouth, you know?
I don't, you know, I got a flash image in my mind when you said that, of that, and I kind of forgot about it. You may have forgotten about it, too, but I'm sure then I mentioned it, you know, boom, right into it. there's a picture going around on Facebook, a painting, I should say, of Barack Hussein Obama stepping on the Constitution and James Madison going, or whoever it is. I couldn't really be bothered to tell about all of them, you know. But, of course, FDR is standing there clapping, and Bill Clinton is standing there clapping, and, you know, oh, Reagan's so worried about the guy on the bench. Have you seen this painting? Have you seen this?
Huh?
It is the worst. Oh, my God. Go look. Go Google. I'm sure you just say Obama steps on Constitution painting. Just Google that. You'll find it.
Oh, dear God.
You're going to absolutely just, your blood will curdle.
Obama steps on Constitution painting? Is that what I'm Googling?
Yeah, try that. Try that. And then look, images. You'll see it. He's standing there in a black suit with his arms crossed, looking off to the left, or his left, or
oh,
right.
Pity's. Wait a minute.
You see? Yeah. I know, it's radio. We're talking about painting.
Yeah, we call that dancing about architecture, but you know what? Sometimes it works. Controversial artist depicts Obama trampling the Constitution.
Mm-hmm. Where?
Oh, Jesus, I saw... Oh...
Yeah. Oh, of course, FDR is happy about that. he looks like the FDR from Little Orphan Annie too. That guy's a joke. Yeah, goodness, oh God, these people.
Oh no, okay, no, wait, yeah. Clinton's clapping and Teddy Roosevelt's clapping, mm-hmm. and FDR is clapping.
Mm-hmm. And Bush is standing there.
And coming. Abraham Lincoln and George Washington and Ronald Reagan. And some other guy in a wig are pointing at some guy on a park bench with a hoodie.
And money is strewn around to symbolize our worthless money. And it's just sad.
And Lyndon Johnson is grinning like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush. And John Kennedy's kind of pointing.
Yeah, so's Bush.
Andrew Jackson's pointing.
See Nixon?
Way in the back, just kind of looking creepy.
Mm-hmm.
Woodrow Wilson seems to be looking fairly approving.
Mm.
Interesting that they've got FDR standing up on both legs.
That's what I said. Yeah, that was my first. And I was like, man, oh, my God, he's a miracle worker. But that's, you know, I mean, that's the fantasy these people believe. This is what they believe. They're so ridiculous. It's not even funny. Just like you mentioned earlier when, you know, you talk about how they, you know, the Catholic Church, they come out and they, you know, they do this and they do that. No, they don't have to report, you know, when priests molest boys and, you know, they don't have to do any of that. And they're going to fight this in terms of, you know, a health care provider paying for or helping a woman to get some birth control that she wants. Why are estrogen pills and a couple of sugar pills, why are they going so batshit about this? I don't know if I'm going to comprehend it. What are you talking about? You know, it's disgusting that the Catholic Church don't want to put condoms in Africa, you know, as AIDS just, you know, it's almost like they want it to happen and they want it to clear out that country, that whole country. The continent of friggin' Africa with everyone with AIDS. They don't want condoms. They don't do this. They tell them this religious spook and this religious this and this, all these, you know, taboos and everything, and now we got Uganda trying to execute homosexuals. What's next? I mean, is that what they're going to do here? Is that what's going to happen when they're going to start trying to execute homosexuals? I mean, Handmaid's Tale, for real?
They'd like to. They'd like to. I mean, if you catch them on a good day, there are several the right-wing dominionist or reconstructionist organizations, reconstructionists in particular, who will tell you outright that, well, you know, it says it's illegal in the Bible, and so therefore they must be stoned.
Goodness.
And not in the good way.
But the Muslims, they're the savages, brutes, and all this other stuff, right?
Right.
Right, okay. I mean, you know, because a liberal, or a progressive, whatever, liberal, progressive, I'll call myself any of that kind of stuff. I don't have a problem with it. So because of that, we like to be open-minded and, you know, go and seek knowledge, hunger for knowledge, and we have to learn about these other cultures and comprehend what, and then the more you know about them, the less differences you wind up seeing. And see, that's the amazing thing, is that these people don't see how exactly the same they are to the world savagery of Osama bin Laden or any of these other caliphates or whoever the hell they are, all these crazy guys living. I mean, even the Muslims in Canada are even issuing fatwas saying honor killings are not part of Islam. What are you doing, right? So we got, and I say to that, you know, better late than never. At least somebody's saying it. All right, good. Okay. And then you look, all right, Christian team, what's your shot? Oh, we're going to outlaw abortion. We're going to get rid of contraceptive. We're going to start killing gays. And voila, Akbar. That's not it just blows my mind. It freaking frazzles me.
Well, no, that's exactly the point, Albert, because remember, we're talking in that one particular case with the every sperm is sacred business, we're talking about Oklahoma stand. Okay, one, it is a state whose very existence is predicated on outright theft of real property, one. Two, they passed, never mind the fact that the courts of the United States overturned it as being absolute unconstitutional lunacy, they passed that Sharia law ban, remember?
Yeah.
Okay?
Uh-huh.
All right.
Hello?
Well, yeah, I know. Just hello? Running up the little semaphore flags. Anybody out there? No, we're just, no, there's nobody getting the signal. So they did that, and they got this bill now that's going to make a fetus into a person, and all of these right-wingers in Oklahoma are six ways from Sunday bent out of shape because that Obama's going to make the Catholics use condoms. All right? At the same time that they, thank God this is still Oklahoma and we don't have to follow that Sharia law, but by God, here in America, we can make everybody follow church law.
Yeah, Ten Commandments.
And no,
brother,
not a micro millisecond of cognitive dissonance whatsoever. Not a, you know, not even the tenth of a W.C. Fields style, no. Double take. Just never. Cruising.
Never. Never. It's amazing. The cognitive dissonance with, I mean, it's a, and this is because they don't ever develop critical thinking skills. They don't ever sit here.
Well, you can't have critical thinking skills if it is absolutely mandatory to your soul's eternal salvation that you believe that humanity is in the mess it's in because a naked woman talked to a gossipy cottonmouth.
Amen, Brother Bob. Amen. It curdles my blood. It's disgusting to think that, I just can't believe that we're still talking about this nonsense. They never get tired of it. They never get tired of it,
and they have vast. I mean, we don't comprehend the money they have. And remember, they're tax free.
Yeah.
All the money that goes into pouring all of this filth into the culture, into the polity, into the nation, into the very viscera of the nation itself. Every last penny that's used to do that is tax-free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
By the way, you got some fan mail.
Oh.
Yeah, Isaac writing in. Now, this is a quote, okay? I'm not trying to use dirty words or anything. This is a quote from our good friend Isaac. He says, Albert is cool as fucking. He keeps me laughing when he calls.
Oh, good. Well, I just wanted you to feel me. I appreciate that. You know, I'm just trying to converse here, trying to break through this wall of crud. I mean, we got to get through. I mean, that's what I mean. We got to get sustainable here. You know, when we're sitting here talking about all this nonsense at the edge of a cliff, you know, they're still talking about, you know, which side of the bread you butter. You know, it's just like, what are you talking about? Do you understand the situation?
Yeah, that's straight out of the Mad Hatter's Tea Party, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's just, I don't even, what are you talking about? Shut up. Sit down and shut up. You get 22,000 people to come out and vote for you when a whole 60,000 people vote. Shut up. Nobody cares about that. There's 320 million people in this freaking country. We're going to listen to, who cares? Rick Santorum, yeah, go ahead. Bring it. I'm tired of this. And, you know, the only choice that we have, is Obama. That's it. Period. He's the only choice we have.
Yeah, I Want a Pony is not on the ballot. You'd be surprised. There's a whole bunch of people that don't get I Want a Pony is not on the ballot.
I mean, I comprehend.
And I stole that from Bart Cop, you know, straight up. Yeah.
I mean, we can't go to that. Jesus, we'd be better off with another term of Bush than Santorum. Oh, my God. Are you crazy? Don't cut off your nose to spite your face. And sometimes I understand that, we have real values that we want to see,
And just for analytical purposes, let's take a minute. That's one of those little cliches that we use, and it probably comes from Shakespeare or something.
Probably.
Let's take a minute and really appreciate that. To cut off one's nose to spite one's face. You ever think about what that really means? It means that you look in the mirror one morning and you go, God, I'm ugly. I'm so ugly, I'm going to cut my nose off and make it worse. Isn't that November, Albert? God, we're screwed up. I think I'm going to make us be a little more screwed up. Maybe a lot.
I hope if you're disappointed with Barack Obama, and there's plenty of reasons for us here.
Because I am, and I think probably somewhere along the way you are.
Oh, of course, and there's plenty of things that I could talk about that I'd want to talk about what I'm disappointed about. And, excuse me, how we can fix it, how we can remedy it, how we can address it, all these other things. And we can go into that, but we're talking about birth control, giving it to women so it only costs them $10 a month. Does their health insurance company helps cover it? I don't even understand. What are you talking about? Shut up! You're not fixing the issues. You're not addressing anything any worth, and you're just trying to go backwards.
Yeah, and this hissy about the Roman Catholic Church and covering... Well, one, at least one of the nation's largest Catholic hospitals already includes contraception coverage in its insurance coverage. I'm sure they'll be excommunicated tomorrow and not be able to be buried in sacred ground or whatever. But they're already doing it. Two. And I'm just asking because, you know, that empirically gathered data is always the best data, right? How many Roman Catholic families do you run across here in America these days that have 15 or 16 children? Because, I mean, I know I've got one good friend. He was raised Roman Catholic. He's got two little girls. And he comes from a family that had three little boys. Now, one of two realities has to obtain in that instance. That is, to wit, his parents had sex three times in their long and happy and still going on marriage.
Naturally.
Or they took a quick look at, shh, quick, honey, roll that thing down on that thing while the Pope's not looking. Oh, God, you worked that in there perfectly.
Thanks.
Because every Roman Catholic home doesn't have a goddamn Palantir in it. where Benny's watery little blue eyes stares into the bedroom.
it's what it is.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll be better in a minute. I'll mute my mic. You talk for a second.
All right. Yeah, no. These people. It just
the eye.
It's crazy. It's crazy talk, and I can't wait till South Park addresses this. Man, we're gonna don't you know you're gonna see South Park with a you know, Planned Parenthood abortion factory, and, you know, and they're making some beauty cream for the lesbians, or, you know, they're going to do something crazy. I hope they're listening. Maybe they get an idea. You
well,
know,
remember,
I can't wait.
Pat Robertson's already been out there for a long time with that Sea of Galilee mud mask.
Oh, yeah, true. That is true. And then, you know, on the other side of that, you know, with Tom Cruise eating placenta omelets, I mean, these people...
Oh, I got another one from you mentioned Tom Cruise.
Oh, goodness, not him. No, not Scientologists. The Mormons are enough.
No, well, it's not exactly Scientology, but just mention, made remind. Okay, so, you know, if you've got your iPhone 4S, you've got that little thing on there called Siri.
Yeah.
And the reason I thought it, because isn't that Tom Cruise's kid's name?
It is, isn't it?
Thank you. listening to The Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.